Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Today, we're going to talk about people coming out of prison, what needs to be done, what should be done. And at our microphones is Darnell Bradford L. He is with the Marsh Science Temple of America. He is a minister and is a coordinator with the PIPS program, and that is for the stands for the Previously Incarcerated Persons program. Also at our microphones is a veteran of this show, Reverend Yvonne Cooper. She is also a coordinator with PIPS, and she is with the African American Methodist Episcopal Church, and we're here to discuss what happens, what needs to be done, what should be done in terms of people being released from prison. Darnell, we're going to start off with you. We have well over 650,000 people being released from prison systems throughout the United States. Approximately 2,000 come back to the District of Columbia out of federal prison every year. They go through what could only be described fairly, regardless of what side of the political spectrum that you're on, as extraordinarily difficult times. They face substance abuse issues when they come back home, housing, health care, finding a job, going back into the communities where you have all these influences that drag you back into the life of crime. Sometimes they come out determined not to go back, and sometimes they come out determined to continue their life of crime. It's an extraordinarily difficult situation, but your group has been around for how long?
We've been around for about 3 years,
okay.
Formally.
And why did you form? Why the Previously Incarcerated Persons as an organization in the District of Columbia, why did you all form? Why did you get together?
Well, there are a number of people who have navigated the system and have returned to the community and have stayed out and become successful. And we look back and we try to remove the stones that were on the path for those who follow us won't have to stumble over the ones that we had to stumble over. So we it's about giving back.
Okay.
And we saw that we had understood how to get through this system, how to make it, some of the keys to being successful, and we want to pass them on because it's too many people are going back for too many reasons.
Now, there is a piece of research that came out of the United States Department of Justice that essentially said that two-thirds, 66% within 3 years are rearrested, 50% are reincarcerated. To a lot of people, those are pretty discouraging statistics.
Well, you take a look at what you have as the situation. First of all, the prisons do very little to help prepare people for re-entering back into society. And so that some people spend a lot of time in the institutions and a lot of that time is wasted. There are golden opportunities to get in touch with yourself, and without the distractions of life on the outside, you can learn things. It used to be that you could get a college degree in prison. Right now, you can't do that. The mm-hmm. money is not available. It's not allowable. People come out... I remember Lawton, the major occupation there was making automobile tags.
Right, and that was the old D.C. prison before right. all D.C. inmates under the Revitalization Act. And for those of us listening beyond the District of Columbia, there was an act that occurred, and it was enacted about 2000. Actually, it was enacted in 1997, but it took place for us in 2000, where all D.C. offenders now went into the federal prison system and not in terms of a D.C. prison to relieve the District of Columbia from what should be state-level financial responsibilities. Darnell, you've been a prisoner.
Yes.
Okay, can I ask why you were in?
Yes, I was in for armed robbery. I had 2 counts of armed robbery, and I had 4 years, and 4 to 12 years in for both counts, and that was turned to 8 to 24 years. Because of work that we did inside of prison, transforming our lives and transforming the old Lawton Reformatory through an organization founded by myself and Roach Brown called Inner Voices, where we took our lessons of life and put them on the stage, first of all, for the inmate population, and then we took them into the community so that we could get young people an opportunity to see how they could go another route. That was a very successful experience and gave me a footing into the community. As a result of that work, Judge June Green, who gave me the 24 years, reduced my sentence to 12 years, and I was eligible for parole and came out and continued the same work. And I've been doing the same related work for the past 30 years.
Okay, we're going to go over to Reverend Yvonne Cooper, and she is, again, a minister with the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Reverend Cooper, or Yvonne, now, you've done time in prison as well.
That's correct. I did, as a matter of fact, I faced 105 years in prison, but through God's grace and mercy, he shortened that time, and I only did 8 months. That's the only time that I served was 8 months. And as I tell people from time to time, I'm so excited and delighted and that God gave me that opportunity to go to prison, because like my brother Darnell, I too try my level best to help those who have been in prison, and even go to the prisons and assist those that are in prison. So when they do come out, prayerfully, they'll have an opportunity to stay on the outside. I mean, it's you said it quite well, Len, that folk are going back at phenomenal numbers, and something needs to be done. And so Darnell and I and a few others got together and formed the PIPS Association. And what better way to help those that are inside than to have those of us who have been there and done that, because we've gone down that road, we've gone through the fire, we've gone through the flood, and so we know those things that the people go through, and so we do the best that we can to assist them. So
now, can I ask you what you served time for?
Sure. This was for accepting bribes. I was an administrative law judge in Washington, D.C., and had 7 counts of accepting bribes. And I'd be the very first one to say I did accept the bribes. But I have been forgiven. I've forgiven myself. And I paid my debt to society. And like those others who have gone to prison, I wanted once I came out, I wanted to have the opportunity to redeem myself, and I want to pay my taxes. I mean, even people who go to prison, once they come home, they really want the opportunity to pay their taxes. They want the opportunity to come out and help their family.
Both of you are involved in as mentors.
That's correct.
Faith-based mentors as of the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency's faith-based program. Okay, cool. Now, let's get around to the larger issue of offenders and what they need and what they should get, because there is good research now that basically indicates that the better prepared an individual is in prison, the better they're going to do on the outside. There is research now that basically says that if they're provided with services when they're released from prison, which we try to do in conjunction with DC government, with which we try to do in conjunction with the faith-based community or other governmental entities like the Veterans Administration, what we try to do is to provide a certain level of services, the collective we.
Sure.
Because we know that they continue to need drug treatment, they continue to need a place to live, they continue to need medical care, they continue to need a job training, daycare in some cases, educational programs, job development, job training. There's a need for that is not completely completed when you're in the prison system. Now, depending upon who you talk to and depending upon what federal prison you go to, there's a difference in terms of the level of preparation that give you. So there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of dealing with the social needs of offenders. We all recognize that, and we all recognize the research essentially states that these programs are successful. Yvonne, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked you last time that we were at these microphones, is that the average person sitting there is going to say to themselves, wait a minute, schools are in dire need. The kids need textbooks. Teachers need salaries. The elderly, and we have an increasing population of the elderly, need housing. They need health care. They need people. We have so many needs. Why do we spend money on individuals who have hurt other human beings? The kids haven't hurt anybody. The elderly haven't hurt anybody. That's where the money needs to go, or all the other programs that people think need to be funded. Why give it to former offenders? Why give it to people coming out of the prison system?
Well, that's an awfully good question and a long question. I'm going to do my level best to address those things you raised. First and foremost, Lynn, Darnell and I just happened to have gotten caught. I'm more than sure you've done something, and the listeners have done things that they should have been, not could have been, but should have been arrested for, but did not get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question then becomes, is there any reason why we should not help out those that are the least of them, the lost, and
the
limited.
I'm going to interrupt you because, again, representing the general audience, they're going to say, I've never put a gun to anybody's face. I've never raped another human being.
That's true.
I've never threatened another human being's life. I've never killed another person.
Okay.
So they're going to say.
Well, I didn't either.
I know. But they're going to say, in terms of people coming out of prison who have done these things, they're going to say, I am separate. No. We don't buy that.
Right. I was going to get there.
Okay.
And what I was going to say is, that I don't know about you, but I know I've seen men and women in a grocery store. In Washington, D.C., we have stores called Safeway, Giant, those kind of stores, Piggly Wiggly down south. And I would imagine people go in and see strawberries and they pick one up and taste it and say, oh, that tastes good. I guess I'll buy some. Well, that's stealing.
But they're not going to go to prison for
But they could.
But they're not.
Not
in our criminal justice system.
Well, no, they wouldn't go, but they could go.
Theoretically,
they could. I mean, if you steal supplies out of the office where you're here today, you really could be prosecuted.
Theoretically,
you
could. I know that if I use a gun and mm-hmm. rob somebody, I may go to prison.
True.
I'm not going to go to prison for stealing the strawberries.
That's true.
And what people say. I mean, people say that, okay, there's a degree. Yes, we've all done things that theoretically we could go to jail for, mm-hmm. that we could go to prison for. But these are pretty big events in people's lives. And why help them?
Okay. Well, it's ingrained in us, those of us that are Protestants, and I'm more than sure the Muslims feel the same way, that we should be helping out those that are the least of us, the limited and the lost, which would include senior citizens, which would include the children. Plus, it's a public safety issue. I mean, the children and the seniors can't get the certain things that they need done if you don't help those that are in prison, because they'll come right back out and do the same thing all over again.
All right, and that's the point. That's the point I was going for.
Okay,
I mean, it doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum that you're on. It's pure pragmatism.
Mm-hmm.
It's we're being purely pragmatic. The more we assist individuals coming out of the prison system, the less damage they're going to do to the rest of us.
Right.
Now we can do it from a religious point of view because you're right. I mean, biblically speaking, Jesus didn't request us, ordered us to go inside the prison systems. I'm positive that the Islamic religion, I've been told, has basically the same tenets, that we are obligated to help out those people who have been caught up in the system. So we have an obligation according to our own religious tenets. I'm not quite sure we follow that obligation. We have the pragmatism of simply helping us. But at the same time, one of the things that influences me is talking to, throughout my career, of literally hundreds of people who have committed crime, who are now taxpaying people who are now reunited with their kids. They're being good fathers. They're being good mothers. They're being taxpayers. And inevitably, I always said, if that program that you won through wasn't there, would you have made it? And that person, many of those individuals would have said, no, I think I would have continued my life of drugs or crime.
Let me say this one thing before we go to my brother Darnell. You know, you mentioned, and so did Darnell mention, the fact that there are no things inside prison today. And so certainly CSOS and other organizations are doing things once they come home. But I venture to say that if we would go back to what we've done in the past, and that is to have some programs and opportunities inside the prison, then it would be we will be further along in helping folk when they come home, because they have something to hold on to. Now, when they come home, they have to start once they get home, because some prisons don't even have a GED program.
Right.
You know,
the state of Washington, I find it very interesting. And in essence, what they said through a bunch of research that they did, and utilizing the research, not just in the United States, but throughout the world, they ordered programs to take place in the prison. They ordered reentry to begin the day say the person goes, this is the state of Washington, not Washington, D.C., that they ordered that reentry begin as soon as the person enters the prison doors and continue when the person is out. Now, they are doing this, I'm not quite sure, from a religious mandate. I'm not quite sure they're doing it from a moral mandate. What they're doing it from is a budgetary point of view, because they believe that they're not, that they're going to lower the rate of recidivism to a certain point where they don't have to build a new prison. And new prisons are, you know, we're talking about $500 million structures and, you know, well over, oh heavens, about $125 million a year to run. So we're talking about an enormous fiscal issue that the states and the district have got to take a look at. And Washington has basically said, if we put more rehabilitation programs, for lack of a better word, in prison, and while they're on community supervision, that'll keep us from building a brand new prison. Darnell?
Well, Lynn, and I wish we had more time to deal with this, because the issue is far broader than prison. Prison is a part of a unfair, unjust system that has the audacity to label those who get caught up in it as offenders, when the reality of their existence is an offense to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
To have to live in unsuitable housing where drugs and all types of vices circulate around their being all mm-hmm. the time, to go to schools that don't educate, that don't teach, teachers that don't teach, to have a whole pattern of criminal experiences set for young people, and they fall into those traps by simply responding to their human nature under the conditions that they live. And then they end up in prison, and over the past few decades, the number of people in that system have increased to the point that now that it's become a problem when they must come out, society begins to respond to it. So I don't like the idea of just isolating the prison system in reentry, because the larger issue is the disparity between races and classes in this country, and prisons as a tool all the way back to the plantation to maintain the equilibrium. Many of the people who are in the prison system who are of African descent represent what would be the potential leadership in this country. How many Obamas are down at Oak Hill?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
Oak Hill being a juvenile facility.
Yeah, juvenile facility. I apologize. The whole idea is that we don't know that, because we're living in a system starting with the old prison leasing system and emancipation. People were released from the plantations as slaves and then arrested in the cities for vagrancy, and then placed right back on the same plantations to continue to work as a part of their sentences. And when we look at who not only are in the prisons, but who even gets arrested, and how the laws are defined to capture and maintain a status quo that is both unjust and unfair. So here in D.C., we are challenging the government and getting some support to give us some basic human rights.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say we, who is we specifically?
Well, the PIPs.
And the previously incarcerated
previously
persons.
Incarcerated people. The previously incarcerated people are trying to, Mayor Marion Barry submitted a bill which included us under the Human Rights Act. It has faced some challenges. There are many barriers to people who have gone through the system and have paid a price
mm-hmm.
and are trying to come back into the community, but there's still a great deal of resistance to that, because some people just don't feel that if you have violated a law that you deserve another chance,
mm-hmm.
that you deserve an opportunity. But mm-hmm. the impractical side of that is, if you're not given that chance, then you resort to what you know from the very beginning, and we have a situation where there won't be enough prisons.
Well, there is a validity to a lot of the things that you say, especially in terms of the fact that they're caught up in an atmosphere where crime is fairly easy. because crime is all around them. Drugs are all around them. I've spoken to literally hundreds of offenders who basically raised themselves. Mm-hmm. Who started drugs early, who started crime early. We in parole and probation called self-raised issues. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to many female offenders who were sexually assaulted. Yes. There's a human tragedy going on. Now, there's a part of society that basically says, we don't care, you do the crime, you do the time, have yourself a pleasant day. But it is, again, a human tragedy. There are literally hundreds of thousands of lives being wasted. Not going to disagree with you there. Prisons, and I've been in the prison hundreds of times, is a sad affair. You can't walk through a prison without feeling a sense of being depressed by the total waste of humanity. Mm-hmm. When you talk to offenders inside the prison system, inside the prisons, you know, again, they're talking exactly like you and I are talking. They have hopes, they have aspirations, they have dreams. Most of them believe as a state that they are going to go and live crime-free lives. Getting on the outside, they run smack into a reality that they cannot deal with in many circumstances.
The reason that we call ourselves Association of Previously Incarcerated People, because even the terms, the language that's used, we have issues with. I don't feel like I'm an offender. Mm-hmm. Have ever been an offender. I've done. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm an ex-con. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm a. You know, I think that I can't deny the fact that I've been incarcerated for a crime. But some of the language that is used is sort of gravitates down and keeps down. It creates a reaction, a stereotypical picture in a lot of people's minds. I'm just reflecting back when we were sitting in the council chamber down at the district, down at the Wilson building, when the debate was going on about the including us as humans and under the Human Rights Act as a class. Mm-hmm. And it was very clear that those who have economic advantages to us being in prison would support keeping us in prison, because we're in prison operating almost as slave labor.
Okay.
And it's just, how do you make this thing fair? How do you give hope, as you talked about, for those who are the hopeless? You take a man, you put him on the desert, and you train him for a swimming meet when he's surrounded by sand, and then you come out and you ask, why can't you swim?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get out here, the people raised, there's discrimination in housing, there's discrimination in employment, there's limitations in terms of what you can do educationally because of the your prison status. When I was in Lawton, we had an opportunity to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Went to UDC. Why was the program stopped?
Mm-hmm.
Because we found that 85% of those who went through this college program stayed in the street.
They had one of the best, the college programs had one of the best success rates of any program. Now, when I represented the Maryland prison system, when I was the spokesperson for the Maryland Department of Public Safety, most of the complaints that we got were the college program, because what they said was, I can't afford to send my kid to college. Why should somebody who has done harm get the college education versus my own child who gets no college education? So you do something wrong and you get a free college education. You do something right and you don't get a college education. Mm-hmm. That's basically unfair. These are the questions that we're wrestling with in terms of previously incarcerated people. This is how society looks at it. But at the same time, society needs to give those people who are coming out of system a break, if not in their own self-interest, of turning tax burdens into taxpayers, in terms of keeping society safer, in terms of the betterment of our cities, in terms of the betterment of our schools. That strikes me that regardless of where you stand on this issue, somehow, some way, we've got to look again at what we do and with offenders before they get into prison. Fine. I agree. While they're in prison, I agree. After they're out, I agree. But the question becomes, and I'm sort of hoping that people listening to this program today have a better understanding of these issues because of what the two of you were saying.
Yvonne? You know, that's the human side is what you just depict and what Darnell just talked about. But let's be also realistic here. Prisons are big business. And it makes sense to those who have a vested interest to keep people in prison because their pockets get fat with the cost, the high cost of telephone calls, with the government. To me, I hate to say this, but it appears as though the government is selling out, wherein the government might have paid about $25,000 a year for a prisoner at one point, has now acquiesced and allowed the business in privatization. Correctional Corporation of America.
And there are others.
Yeah,
there
and others. You know, I think they're about 50 or 51% of the folks that are that are running the prisons.
We only have a couple minutes left.
Okay.
What can we say to the average person listening to this program? What does that person need to know?
With respect to, well, you know, while in prison, to do what Darnell said initially when he first spoke, use the opportunity while you're in prison to get yourself together. Just get a hold of whatever programs are there, and they may not be many, but whatever programs there are there, you need to get into a program and do the best you can to get yourself together so when you come out, you can join up with some other programs for people when they come home for reentry. There are a limited number of programs, so it's not too much that a person can do, and that the government needs to do a little bit more, a whole lot more. I'll let Darnell speak the last a minute or so.
Okay, now what do you want the government to do specifically?
Well,
and what do you want the average person to do? I mean, when I talk to individuals, I do say, look, that person coming out of the prison system, he comes to you for a job, unless you know, that person's ineligible, like a sex offender working with kids. Obviously, that's not going to work. But that person needs another chance in terms of work, and there's an awful lot of people coming out of the prison system that need a job, and please don't blow off a person because he has a criminal history. I mean, that's one thing that comes from me. Darnell, what are some others?
Well, Lynn, I think it's fairly complex, but then it's simple. The peace of society depends upon justice. And the challenge is not so much to the public as it is for those of us who understand these issues and are willing to provide some enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why the PIPs were organized so that we can begin to do forums that uplift the understanding around these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we are mounting right now. We're also asking people to get involved and get engaged, to help work with the population that's coming out. And one of the problems in the past has been that the training for that has not been very good, so that a lot of people really don't know how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in the process of developing a training module to assist those who are interested in helping deal with this transition so that you don't have to be a rocket scientist, as they say, in order to help somebody. You just need to have the kind of training that is required to understand the dynamics of what you're dealing with.
And you're talking about the people who work with people coming out of the prison system as volunteers and mentors.
Yes, yes. And we see that as going a long way at this time.
Mm-hmm.
That there be education and enlightenment, there be training and assistance and volunteers of those who want to try to help strike a little bit of equilibrium in an unjust situation.
All right, so we need more people to mentor to offenders coming out of the prison system. We need more opportunities in the prison system for jobs, drug, substance abuse, job training, rather. And when they come out, they continue to need services, specifically jobs and substance abuse-related issues. And in the District of Columbia, housing. I don't know if in Topeka, Kansas, housing is going to be that much of an issue, but in the super super hot D.C. real estate market it is.
They say one of the fifth richest city in the world. It's a challenge. There's some institutional things that's going to take time, but there's some things that can happen right now. And just talking with one of your directors here who acknowledged the fact that regardless of the preparation, the critical stage is when they first hit the street. So we're saying that come and be a part of assisting those in that transitional period through volunteer mentoring.
We're going to have you back at the microphones. We need to continue this conversation. At our microphones today was or is Darnell Bradford L., a minister with the Moorish Science Temple of America, and Reverend Yvonne Cooper. Again, they're both coordinators with the Previously Incarcerated Persons Program here in the District of Columbia. Both are faith-based mentors, and Reverend Cooper is a minister with the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Look for us on our website at www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov, of the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Thanks and have yourself a very pleasant day.